You are listening to City Lights Podcast. City Lights is a community inviting people to follow us as we follow Jesus. We are currently in our series, Brokenness is Beautiful, where Jesus provides a piercing perspective about life. He reveals a paradoxical view of beauty, which is counterintuitive and quite surprisingly found in brokenness. We hope you will discover with us that brokenness is beautiful.
I don't know if you guys have been in a moment in your life where you were kind of listening to yourself or maybe watching yourself and you realize like, wow, that is just not me. Or you almost surprised yourself. It happened to me, for me, yesterday. It was probably yesterday evening when I was watching TV and I was really eager and ready and excited for the Florida Gators to run the table. And basically, I wasn't saying national championship yet, but I was definitely saying SEC championship. Now, if you don't know about football, I'm not going to keep talking about it, but the Florida Gators were undefeated yesterday, and no one was talking about playing University of Georgia. We're just like, oh, that's an easy win. You guys just whooped up on another school in South Carolina, a little south of us, and so there's going to be no trouble with Georgia. I mean, it was just overlooked, and my Florida Gators lost yesterday. Now, here's what I realized. I lost it too. And it was a moment for me. Like, I texted my wife last night. She likes Notre Dame, and I was trying to be gracious. So I said, I hope your team does well tonight. And she said, sorry about Florida. And I said, well, I didn't comment back because there was just something inside of me. I remember I realized something was wrong, not because I said anything, but my emotions. Like, it was just, if you saw me, and there was a couple people over our house, I don't know if you saw it during dinner or not, but actually we were talking about the best part of the day and the worst part of the day, and I had food in my mouth, and they said, Chris, what's your worst part of the day? And I just pointed at the TV over there. It was off at that point, but I was like, the Gators lost. And I used to be a sports fan that got so caught up in sports, and I had to stop watching for a little while because my emotions literally were at its low and its high with sports, and it's just so foolish. I'm not even playing the game. Why am I getting that emotional? But I don't know if you're like me, but I mean, I'd talk to the players. I'd pray for them. I'd even like sit in the same spot in my couch. I'm not superstitious, that kind of guy, but when I look back, I'm like, yes, you are, because I would do certain things. When the Dolphins would lose, I was like, it's because I didn't watch the game. And then when I'd watch the game, they'd lose. So I was like, I'm not going to watch the game. And then, I mean, it's just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But here's the thing. I didn't even realize that I was that desirous or desperate, or a word that we've sang a lot today, hungry for the Gators to win until they lost. And sometimes we don't really know what we're going after, what we desire, until we don't have it. And God's gracious in this life to help expose those things. Now, you don't have to be a football fan for this to apply to you. I've watched sixth grade boys and girls just judge and measure their happiness based on whether a boy or a girl notices them. In fact, I've watched 33-year-old boys and girls have their joy measured by whether somebody notices. In fact, all of us, let's be real. Maybe it's not like, does this person like me, but it's, does this person approve of me? Do they accept me? Will they value me? I mean, it's amazing. It doesn't seem to end as a struggle, wanting people to validate us and find that we have worth. For men, a lot of times it's in our jobs. For women, it's who we are as mothers or spouses or how we look. And before we know it, we realize in a moment like maybe this moment that we've been desiring and seeking after things and longing for things that we didn't even know were longings until we find ourselves in a funk like I was yesterday. So I don't know what you have been hungry for, and that's really the question I love to ask you as we get started is, what are you hungry for? Just a simple question, what are you hungry for? And I'm going to define what hunger is in a couple of moments. But I think I'll just run a quick list. Some of us are hungry for a job, and you've graduated college, and you've been dreaming about something, and you're hungry for a certain kind of job, and you don't have one right now, or you lost your job, or some of us are hungry for a different job than we have right now, or we're hungry for a position in that job. Some of us are just hungry for respect. For love languages, for male and females, statistics show that men just want to be respected. Women want to be listened to and loved. Maybe that's what you're hungry for. Maybe in your marriage, that's something you're longing for. I just wish that my husband or my wife would pay more attention to me. I know they say they love me, but I just wish they'd listen to me. Maybe that's you. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're hungry for revenge, and I'm not going to act like that might not be going on in this room. Some of you are just hoping for someone to get what they deserve, and whether you're going to do it or somebody else is going to do it, you're hoping and hungry for it. Maybe it's success. That's what you're longing for. Whatever that looks like for you, whether that's success with your health or success professionally or success socially, whatever it is, maybe it's social justice. I mean, I meet people who are giving their lives right now to free people from sex trafficking or free people from hunger, or free people from any kind of form of atrocity or injustice. I mean, maybe that's what you're hungry for. Maybe you're hungry to be debt-free. Maybe you're hungry for, I just met someone 2 weeks ago, and we haven't even met face-to-face yet, but their daughter is going for their third surgery, and she's 3 years old. Third surgery for her heart. I know that family is hungry for their little girl to be made well. Now, here's the thing, guys. Desire and hunger isn't all bad. Let me, you know, all those things, it's not a bad thing to want to be out of debt. It's not a bad thing to want to be a Gator fan, as long as your joy isn't fully connected to that thing. But what are you hungry for? What are you hungry for, and how do you measure your hunger would be a follow-up question to that. How do you measure whether that hunger is healthy or right or good or out of whack? And let me just ask you guys, I mean, you'll see if you visit City Lights long enough, you'll know that hopefully we're not trying to be a transparent community. We just believe that God has revealed himself as the light, and when the light comes into our lives, it exposes everything that we are, and so we are not afraid to expose the things that we think, say, and do, whether they're foolish and embarrassing or they're good. We believe the foolish and embarrassing are the things that God is showing us, so we don't have to be stuck in them, and we believe the good comes from him. So let me just ask you guys just for a minute, and this we do this, we interact some, what's something you guys have been hungry for in life right now, in your circle, in your context, what's something you've been hungry for? Shout it out real loud. A job. I already hit on that. Good. Yep. How many else? Raise your hand if a job is something you're really hungry for right now and desiring. All right. So employers, any employers in the room? Leave your hands up, guys, looking for a job. Okay. Keep them high. There'll be interviews after next steps at the end here. What else? What's something you've been hungry for? Maybe it's been recently. Maybe it's something you just realized, like, I didn't even know I had a hunger and desire for this, but I just realized it. What else? Graduating. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. What else? Going back to China, that's great. Getting into college, good. What else? Hungers, desires. Getting through college, yeah. All right, so a lot are revolving around school, and then you're gonna find the job that you had your hand up for job too. You're hungry for a lot of stuff, that's good, that's good. Well, ultimately, I really believe this, that hunger is it's what Jesus is talking about in this passage this morning. He chooses these words, hungry and thirsty. And he chooses these words very intentionally. And they're relevant in our culture, but they're even more relevant, and they meant something even deeper than it means in our culture. When we say hungry and thirsty, maybe you're like me right now and you are thirsty. I'm not going to drink this yet, but I'm hungry as well. I didn't eat breakfast yet. I just had a large coffee and I am hungry already. But when Jesus talks about hungry and thirsty, he's talking about a much more severe form of that. He's talking about, to give it away ahead of time, he's talking about hungry to the point of death. Like, I'm dying to eat this. Like, my life's about to be taken from me. The kind of hunger that Jesus is talking about is, it's a picture of it is in 436 BC. In 436 BC, there was a famine in Rome. And the Tiber River was a place where all these people, there were literally thousands of people in 436 that they actually thrust themselves into the Tiber River because they were starving to death. And instead of dying of starvation, they chose to drown. Now you might be like, that's pretty morbid, Chris. Why would you tell that? I mean, that's not even in the passage. Jesus is teaching 400 plus years after that. Well, that's the exact kind of hunger that Jesus is talking about in this passage. Hunger that is so desperate that you'd be willing to die for it to be satisfied. That's what he's talking about. And I'm going to explain it more and more. If you have your Bible, turn to Matthew. We're in our conversation called Brokenness is Beautiful. And if you've been with us for the last several weeks, you've seen that we've been talking more and more about what Jesus says about the world and what he says about God. And the Sermon on the Mount, really, the easiest way to say it is this sermon that Jesus gives us, his first sermon, he's talking all about what it looks like to be in fellowship with God. You see on the screens, you saw it on the bumper, it's a conversation about wholeness. Ultimately, the law was not meant to make us whole. And God gave us the law. You guys have heard the law. The first week we talked about how there were 613 biblical laws. That's exhausting. I'm not a guy who likes laws. I'm not a guy who likes rules. So the whole idea of God having rules and laws really turned me off when I was young. 613 laws. And then Jesus comes on the scene because so many people had misinterpreted laws and they had actually added laws to the laws. The Pharisees ended up having these righteous people who tried to live perfectly, had volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes on top of the 613 laws so that they would possibly maybe live whole, W-H, whole, like have a full life and not be so fractured and broken. They were trying to do it by fulfilling law. Well, Jesus comes on the scene and says, I'm gonna tell you what God really is interested in. And he ultimately starts to describe things. He talks about people who are poor in spirit. He talks about people who are mourning. He talks about people who are meek. And this morning talks about people who are hungry and who are thirsty. And he ultimately, if you haven't been with us, Jesus is basically saying this. You know who's beautiful in the kingdom of God? You know who's beautiful in my Father's sight? It's people who recognize they're broken, not people who act like they're whole. So let's look at this verse. I'm going to read chapter 5, verses 1 through 7. We've been standing up every week that we've read the scriptures, and I'm going to invite you to do that again today, just out of honor of God's word. So if you would, just stand with me. In the Old Testament, I've told you each week, in the Old Testament, when the law of God and God's words were read, all the people would stand out of respect for it. And so we weren't necessarily planning on doing that, but week one, I sense we should, and we're still doing that. So chapter 5, verse 1, Matthew says this. Seeing the crowds, Jesus went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he began his first sermon by saying this. He opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." And this morning we're going to look at this, verse 6. "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." They shall be satisfied. God, would you give us understanding that only you can bring? My words are not enough. Would you please speak to us? We need you. We need you, and we want to hear from you. In your holy name, amen. You can be seated. If you haven't been with us, I don't expect you to understand necessarily what the word blessed means, or I expect you to walk in with an idea of what it looks like to be blessed. And in our culture, we heard all sorts of explanations of what blessed means. Happiness, and I told you the root word of happiness actually means chance. That's actually what the word means. So if you're depending on happiness to make you whole, it's a chance and it's a change. It's not something to depend to build your life on. And we continue to look like, I took a poll from you guys, and blessed means to have a certain amount of money, and blessed means to have a certain kind of possession. And our working definition and understanding of blessed from the scriptures is not that kind of understanding. And so if you've been with us, you know this definition. If you're just joining us, there's going to be a definition on the screen to help you understand how we've been understanding what blessed is. So it just simply means this. Blessed is joy given by God, which is completely independent of all the chances and changes of life. And that comes from William Barclay. He goes on to describe it like this in a functional way. It's a joy, it's something that's given by God that's independent of the chances and changes of life. I mean, it can't be taken away from you. It's a joy that actually seeks us. It actually seeks us. I mean, that's pretty incredible. When you're trying to seek something, this joy is seeking you and trying to free you. It's a joy which seeks us through our pain. And oftentimes we'd say pain equals non-blessing, but there's something in the midst of the pain that's pursuing us so that we can have joy, even when there doesn't seem to be any emotional joy. It seeks us through our pain. It's a joy which sorrow, loss, pain, and grief are powerless to touch, and it shines through tears, and nothing in life or death can take it away. And I remember the first week I said, would you guys trade your idea of what it looks like to be blessed or three wishes that you could have anything for this kind of blessing where you can have something that God literally is holding for you, which is so incredible about this. We look in our lives trying to reach for things and say, if I have that thing, I'll be blessed, but that thing will be taken away at some point. If you live long enough, you know all the things that you have, most of them, actually we know all of them, we're going to lose them all at some point. The whole idea, the one who dies with the most toys wins, it's not true. You're just going to die without anything. It's really not true. And so we've been trying to understand what the word blessed means in the context of what Jesus is talking about. And he says blessed is something that is independent of the chances and changes of life. And so this morning he continues that conversation. We're going to continue that conversation. And he says in verse 6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. I know something about all of you, and I don't have to have a conversation with you. Every single one of us is seeking satisfaction. And maybe you're like Mick Jagger. I can't get no satisfaction. You guys know our culture has sung about it for years and years. It's as old as time that man has sought satisfaction and fulfillment in things, in relationships, and people. I don't even have to ask you, have you guys been searching for satisfaction in things and relationships at a point in your life? Every hand will go up, I know it. In fact, that's the way you've been designed. You've actually been built that way. Do you know that? There's not something wrong with you that you desire. There's not something wrong with you that you want to feel whole and satisfied. The key to it all, though, is what Jesus is describing. He says, you are only meant to find real, lasting wholeness in fellowship with your Creator God. And until we get to the point where we realize that it's only found in him, we will be left wanting. This statement that Jesus made, he says the key to finding satisfaction and wholeness is in these very words. So he said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. I've been reading a book called Compelled by Love. I think some of you guys have heard of Heidi Baker. She's a missionary in Mozambique. She cares for orphans there. I was just reading part of her book yesterday or the day before, and literally the thousands and thousands and thousands of children that she's been caring for just is staggering to me. staggering to me. But she described what hunger and thirst is like in Mozambique. And she said, recently we lost one of our pastors in our community to starvation. And she went on to tell the story that a pastor had his family so hungry that they were literally about to die. And I don't know that any of you, I don't want to assume that you maybe haven't been in a situation like that, but most of us probably have never been to the point where we can actually say, I'm literally starving to death. But Heidi Baker had watched and does watch people literally die of starvation. And so she described this one pastor, and I was interested. I was like, how did a pastor die of starvation? Well, to feed his family, he got so desperate that he dove into the river in Mozambique that's infested with crocodiles. And as he dove in there, he went in there just to pull up one lily pad bulb, just one bulb of lily pad. So at the end of it, it's roots, and you can eat some nutrients from that. And as he dove in there, he got eaten alive by a crocodile, and his family wasn't able to make it. That is what Jesus is talking about when he says hunger and thirst, that you'd be willing to die to find satisfaction for it, that you'd be willing to give up everything and anything to find satisfaction for it. It's the story I told in the beginning about in 436 BC when people thrust themselves in the river. They said, I cannot get, so I'm going to give up. Jesus is not saying commit suicide. He's saying that is what hunger and thirst really looks like. It's desperate. In Jesus' culture, if this was the Sermon on the Mount and I was the Jesus figure giving the sermon and he looked out and said, blessed are those who are hungry and thirsty, these people would go, I know what it's like to be hungry and thirsty, because most people in Jesus' time, even if you were a working person, you would only have meat, like substantial food once a week. And that was rare. Unless you were part of some sort of dignitary, you wouldn't eat very often. So starvation and people dying of hunger or of thirst was a normalcy. So when he looked at people and say, hey, blessed are you if you're hungry or thirsty, I mean, it's a contradiction. Either it's a contradiction or it's a paradox, and Jesus means something else. He's talking about spiritual hunger and spiritual thirst, but he uses language that was personal, invasive, and painful for them, because I guarantee you there are people in the thousands that he was teaching who had lost loved ones or that day hadn't eaten in days. And so he says, blessed. There is a joy that's independent for you when you're hungry and thirsty for something. It's desperation. So if we were to try to describe what it looks like to be hungry, I'd say it like this. Hunger and thirst represents specifically this. A desperation as serious death, as serious as death. That's what we're getting at here. So if we were to maybe plug that into this beatitude or plug it into this statement, Jesus is saying this, blessed are those who are desperate for, instead of hungry and thirsty. And I know we have context for hungry and thirsty, but I don't think we have Jesus' context for hungry and thirsty. Unless some of you, and I wouldn't even ask you to do it, if maybe you've been in such a difficult place in life that you weren't able to eat, maybe you were malnourished. And I know in our culture, we actually deal with the opposite. Our culture is infested with eating disorders where mostly women, but I've met men as well, decide to try to control their life by not eating to have some form of an illusion of control, to the point where they almost die. But that's about a completely different desire, but it's still a desire. It's a desire to have control and feel safe. And so it's almost the same thing. We're talking about the same kind of desire. I've watched people lose their lives. My family and I have been able to care for people and have to bring them to the hospital because they're literally on the brink of death, couldn't even walk anymore because of eating disorders. That is a desire to have a control in life, just like a desire for hunger. I want food, but I can't get it. Some people are saying, I can get food, but I don't want it. It's the same thing of desire, a desire and a desperation that's as serious as death. So it would be like, blessed are those who are desperate for, or blessed are those who are willing to die for. Ultimately, it'd be like this, blessed are those who are at the brink of death. And he gives us context. This desperation has a destination. I keep saying that privately in my own mind. My desperation has to have a destination. I can't just be desperate for anything. Jesus is saying it's good to be desperate. Let me just say this. It's good to have desire and it's good to be desperate, but your desire and your desperation has to have the right destination. And if it doesn't, we find ourselves what? Continually desperate. It's never going to be satisfied and filled. And if you guys, if you're the young people in here, you're probably looking to people who are older than you and you see the things they have and the relationships they have and the things that they're doing, and you might say, I desire to have that someday. And listen, desire is not necessarily a bad thing, but if that desire is the thing that you're seeking to make you feel what Jesus is talking about, satisfied, it won't work. It won't work. I have a great marriage. I love my bride. I met her at 6 years old and she was absolutely incredibly beautiful at that point. This beautiful, like flowing, curly brown afro of hair. I mean, just stunning little squeaky girl. It was incredible. And I loved her that day and I love her still this day way more than I ever loved her that day. But my wife is not enough to bring satisfaction and fulfillment in my life. This theater full of people is not close to satisfaction. Jesus is way more satisfying than any earthly possession or relationship. The sooner we as people understand that, the more we'll walk around full and ready to bring that fulfillment to others. Jesus is trying to help us understand that. I was praying late last night when I was leaving the office around like 12. And I just said, Jesus, I've studied, I've prepped. What's the one thing that you're wanting to say to the people that you don't want me to miss and you don't want them to miss? And it was that. I was really excited. He just said, I want them to be full. I want them to be whole. I want them to be satisfied. The very thing that you want, he wants for you too. The thing that's so great about Jesus as the lover of your soul is he's helping disarm, remove, take out the things that won't bring satisfaction. And sometimes that doesn't feel loving. It feels offensive and mean, and selfish and rude. But to know Jesus and his love for you, if we really knew him well, we would sit like this in life and say, take anything you want, because I know you're only out for your glory, and that's ultimately for my good. So would you say this? I mean, this is what it comes down to. Would you say, I'm as good as dead unless I have the righteousness of God? Well, Chris, why do I have to say that? Because that is exactly what Jesus is saying is blessed. Blessed is the person who says, I am as good as dead if I don't have the righteousness of God. In fact, the righteousness of God is everything to me. It's more precious than my life. It's more precious than any possession. The righteousness of God is everything. And Jesus said, blessed is that person who feels this way. Blessed is the person who truly has a hunger and a thirst that is only and specifically for the righteousness of God. And this person will have a joy that's independent of anything. Nothing can take it away. Well, let's understand what righteousness is. And righteousness is certainly a word we understand in our culture. Unfortunately, we know it as self-righteousness or you're so righteous. And it gets talked about a lot in religious circles. Oh, you're just holier than thou, you're righteous. I think it's correct. It's a correct assessment of people and it's a correct assessment of a lot of religious circles. So I'm not gonna deny that. It's true culturally. But Jesus is, again, he's uncovering the true meaning of things. So he says, what is a desperation that looks as serious as death look like for righteousness? What does that thing look like? What is righteousness? Let me just give you a little definition of righteousness, and I'm sure you have one as well. But it's just consistent living within the perfect will and way of God. That's what righteousness is. And I think a lot of us in this room would go like, ah, man, well, I'm not hungry or thirsty or desperate as serious as death to live in the will and way of God perfectly. Like I don't know that you guys wake up that way. Maybe some of you do. Maybe some of you on the way here were praying like, God, all I want is your will and all I want is your way. That's it. That's all I want. Let me just give you a little, let's look back and then look forward. Jesus, as I've said almost every single week in this conversation, Jesus lived the most normal human life in history. He was the most normal human being. And we look at Jesus and go like, he was so abnormal and supernatural. No, he actually decided, I'm going to live perfectly the way that every human being was meant to live, which is perfect fellowship and trusting relationship with God. What's the byproduct of Jesus' life? He lived a whole life to the point where even when he went to the cross, he said, that's my joy. That's my joy. My joy is to go to the cross. Why? Because he decided my desperation, as serious as death, is to live in the will and the way of God. And what's the byproduct of Jesus Christ's life? If you read through the Bible and you get to the end, every knee, every tongue, bowing and confessing that Jesus is Lord. Fullness. He brings life to the lifeless. He brings people from death to life. And that's the very thing that he's inviting you into. When you hunger and thirst for righteousness, when you have a desperate desire as strong as death, that strong as death brings life not only to you, but it brings it to others. So righteousness is consistent living within the perfect will and way of God. Romans chapter 3 tells us, and we're not going to turn there, but Romans chapter 3 tells this to us about righteousness, because a lot of times we define righteousness by looking around and we go, well, I'm doing a better job than that person, and I'm doing a little better job than that person, so I probably need to do a little bit better. And that person, man, if I'm compared to that guy, I'm really good. I'm in a great, great spot. I mean, that's what we do. We just define righteousness by other people, but righteousness is defined by God, ultimately in the person of Jesus. So if you've lived more righteous, more perfectly in the will and way of God than Jesus did, then you're in good shape. But I know all of you well enough to know that no one's probably in here going, man, I'm the better life, more righteous than Jesus. No way. Maybe some of you are. If you are, I'll buy you lunch today. I'd love to hear about it. Romans says that no one's been righteous, not a single person. In fact, Romans says history stacked on top of history, on top of history, on top of history, amounts to not enough righteousness to ever get to heaven or ever be right with God, ever. There's not enough, enough consistent living with God. Now, here's what I do know, and for my life functionally, and probably for yours as well, we have been willing to have a partial relationship with God, a partial righteousness with God, but not a complete one. A partial righteousness, but not a complete one. And that would be a question to consider is, are you willing to come completely undone or just partially? See, complete undoing is what Jesus is talking about here. Complete undoing. He's saying somebody who's desperate is serious as death. If your desperation is as serious as death, you're basically saying this, nothing will stand in the way. Nothing will stand in the way of this for me. I'm willing to let anything and everything die. In fact, I will be proactive. You tell me what needs to go, God, I'm gonna let it go because I need what you have. I mean, that's in plain and simple terms, that's what Jesus is saying. Blessed is the one who gets to the point and says, I need what you have and I'm willing to give up anything and everything to get it. One of the greatest things about the message of Jesus, he says, you cannot do this on your own. Don't try. I mean, what's incredible about this, and I even hesitate to say this statement, but this isn't about doing righteousness. It's about desiring it. But it's about being desperate for it. Let me say this again, and church history says that clergymen, pastors, preachers never want to tell the people it's not about doing, it's about desire. So you go like, okay, as long as I desire the right thing, but if I don't do it, I'm okay. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this. Jesus is saying you could never, the law says you can never do enough righteousness. You can never live perfectly in fellowship with God all your life. You can never do it. And what Jesus is saying is the sooner you realize how hungry and desperate you are for somebody else to do that on your behalf, that's when you're gonna feel and experience fulfillment between me and you. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying it's not right to do righteousness. I'm not saying you're not meant to live in fellowship with God that's seamless and connected. No, you are. But if you leave today going like, I just need to be righteous. I need to be hungry and thirsty to be right. So I'm gonna set out my life. I'm gonna try to do all those things. Jesus is not saying, hey, go try to be like me. Just do everything I did. But Chris, you said like on your shirts and on your wrist, it says follow me on your shirt. Aren't you telling people to come watch you? I'm saying, come watch me because I'm watching Jesus. And everything I'm trying to do, I'm trying to follow what he does. And you'll know when I'm doing something that's not like him because I'll go, whoa, don't follow that. Don't follow that. Jesus is trying to usher us into a life like his. He says the pathway to that is desperation for his kind of righteousness. What does desperation look like? And some of you might be going, Chris, how do I know if I'm desperate, like as serious as death for righteousness? Here's what desperation looked like this last week for me. I get an email from somebody who says, I'm not saying any names about people, and I get lots of these every week. So if you're like, oh, I know who that is, or I read your email, I bet I know that. No. I get emails probably every week or texts every week with someone saying, hey, Chris, I just want to let you know that I am so sick and tired of what I watch on the computer. I'm so sick and tired of pornography. It's destroying my life. I am so wretched and ruined, and it's tearing everything apart in my life. I want to do whatever it takes to get out of my life. That is what hungry and thirsting for righteousness looks like in part. I talk with people on a weekly basis as well who are dealing with same-sex attraction, and they're saying the same kind of things. I'm talking with people, and I mean, just the list that we ran at the beginning, I could run that same list right now for you. With all the things, what does desperation as serious as death look like for righteousness? It's, in part, it's saying, I don't want anything to do with the old way. I don't want to do life with sin anymore. Okay, so if I'm gonna break this into two parts, what does it look like to hunger and thirst for righteousness? It's simply this. It's looking at your life that was separated from God and said, I don't wanna have anything to do with that anymore. I don't want anything to do with that anymore. So I need to ask you that question. Is there part of life that you still wanna have control over? Is there still part of life that you know does not bring God glory, is not part of his will, is not part of his way, but you want? If that is still in you, there is not a desperate desire for righteousness. And I don't mean that in a mean way, I'm just letting you know. Now, but Chris, you said that a desperate desire for righteousness looks like somebody who's struggling. Yeah, they're struggling and going, I don't want this. God's not saying you need to be perfect. In fact, the whole posture of the series is this. It's like a man broken down, it's a woman broken down saying, God, I'm a mess. I'm so desperate for you to do something. He says, that is beautiful. But God, I'm a wreck. I know, but now you know it too. And I don't want you to stay that way. I want you to be satisfied. Well, what do I do? I can't do anything. He goes, perfect, I know. Just remember that, you can't do anything. Well, what am I gonna do for you? Trust me, let my righteousness become yours. So two parts. First part of it is this. You are sick and tired of the sin that so rules you. I mean, the Bible uses language like slave. You're a slave to it. And you go, I don't wanna be a slave anymore to the sin. The other part of it looks like longing for everything that he has. This is the part that I think divides the room quickly. In fact, I was weeping in my car on the way home last night, weeping. I didn't want to weep, but I was by myself. It's a safe time to do it. And I was crying and crying because I just thought about what I'm about to say, I thought about you guys listening to this and how it would divide the room. I think all of us, if we could hear that our sins could be forgiven and those things could be taken off of us and the things that feel like slavery were removed from our lives, we'd go, I'll take that. Sure, that's not bad. I would like that. In fact, please, let's do that. But at the same time, when you're hungry and thirsting for righteousness, when you have a desire as strong as death, it's saying, I only want to do what God wants with every breath and every moment of my life. I want all that gone, and I want all that he has. And remember, if you haven't been with us, you don't know that maybe you don't know that this conversation that Jesus is having with us is progressive. So let me demonstrate it. This first thing that we looked at was poor in spirit. And all that meant is to be spiritually bankrupt, to mentally understand, like, God, I get it. I cannot do enough righteousness. And literally, I took the posture last week. It crushed you. You said, God, I'm thinking about my struggle. I'm thinking about my sin. I'm thinking about my life, and it is broken. I can't do this. And he says, that's beautiful. And then the posture goes, not only thinking about your brokenness, not only thinking about your sin, but he says, blessed are those who mourn. And you guys know what mourning is. It's like, I'm thinking about something that happened. Now I'm feeling deep emotions about it. He said, blessed are you who think about your sin and feel a certain way about your sin. That can be beautiful if you're broken up about those things. If you're thinking about your sin and you're feeling things about your sin and it's brokenness, that's beautiful to me. And then it's progressive. Last week we saw that you move from, God, I need you in my mind and I need you in my thoughts, my mind and my emotions. I need you. I'm broken. I need you. And you move into this thing, blessed are the meek. He's saying those who recognize that their life now is controlled in a good way, defined, led by Jesus. And we looked at the yoke. Jesus says, come take my yoke upon you. Take it on with me. And Jesus is right there with us. It's literally like his arm's under mine and mine arm is under his and we're going together. He says, dependency and meekness is continued dependency for God to give you every action and attitude. And now look at the next one. Blessed is the person who is so desperate to live in fellowship with God perfectly, to be separated from their sin and to be separated in a positive way to the living God. I think the progression wasn't too bad. Oh, you guys have messed up. Oh, yeah, we have. You've thought about it. Oh, how does that feel? Oh, it doesn't feel real good. Those are the first two. This next one, and now Jesus is saying, remember that what you're thinking about, remember what you're feeling, and now your actions get stirred up from this. And also, by the way, hunger and thirst, desperate desperation. You already know the desperation, but now he's saying it to the fullness. He's saying you need to be desperate to be freed from your sin, but you also need to have that matched desperation to be living in fellowship with God. And that's hard. That's really, really hard. Here's the wonderful promise about this. He says the people who are desperate like that are going to be satisfied. So every single one of us who is looking for satisfaction, who's looking for fulfillment, who's looking to be whole, a conversation about wholeness, he just said it to us. He said your wholeness and your satisfaction, your delight is dependent on how desperate you are. If you understand your desperation at the level that God says, he says you have not done anything good enough to be right with me. And you go, well, God, that hurts. That's frustrating. That's offensive. He says, I understand. I love you enough to wound you. Well, what do I do with that, God? He goes, I'm the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life. I am your righteousness. You say, well, God, I want that. And he goes, well, do you want to separate yourself from sin? Yeah, God, I need that. I desperately need that. And he says, good. And do you also hunger and thirst? Do you desperately need, like this, as serious as death, do you want to live with me too? Live righteously. Remember, our definition of righteousness is to live consistently with God, whatever his will is, whatever his way is. So I guess I just ask you that simple question. Just that simple question. Are you hungry and thirsty for the righteousness of God? Are you hungry and thirsty to be, you're like, it doesn't matter what it takes. I will die to be separated from my sin, and I would rather die than not be with my God. That's what it comes down to. That is really what it's all about. I mean, this is significant. This is serious. This is such a deep, penetrating dagger for us, isn't it? Do you have desperation that is as serious as death? You're saying, I would rather die than keep doing sinful things. I'd rather die than think that I can do it. I'd rather die than feel like I can do it. I'd rather die than be dependent on myself to do things. And I would rather die if I had to do it on my own. I'm as serious as death about my sin. I'm serious as death about following God. Listen, that is the person who finds the most satisfaction. And most, I want to be careful. I'm not saying measuring like it can be increased, but the more empty you are, that's the more like fulfilling, pouring in wholeness that God allows you to experience. So a couple questions as we're ending. Are you convinced that self-dependence doesn't satisfy? Because that's the functional question as we leave. That's it, right there. The next moment you have an opportunity to do what you want to do versus what God wants to do, you will have to sit at that crossroads and say, what am I convinced of? Do I desperately need God to intervene right here and work on my behalf and lead me? Or can I just depend on myself? If you depend on yourself, functionally you're saying, God will not satisfy me, so I will bring satisfaction myself. Right? Isn't that true? Functionally, it's amazing. We think one thing, but functionally, we totally act out a completely different one. When you depend on yourself today, at any point if you do, and I'm sure I will be tempted to do as well, I'm looking at God saying, I've got it, I will do a better job. That is not the posture of somebody who's broken. That's a posture of somebody who's trying to act like they're whole on their own. And Jesus is saying, my sweet children, I want you to be whole. Here's the pathway to it. It's not performance. It's recognition you can't perform. Another question. What are you currently hungry or thirsty for above righteousness, above living apart from your sin and completely separated to God? What are you currently hungry or thirsty for? What do you want more than that? What do you want more than the righteousness of God lived out in your life? What do you want more than that? And listen, we're on a journey together, and maybe I would love to challenge you. Write it down. Maybe you know what it is. And what it means is this. How do you know, Chris, how do I know if I'm more hungry or thirsty for something other than God? Well, would you just trust God to take that out of your life right now? Shoot, is that what it means? Yeah. That's how you can figure out and measure whether something means more to you than the righteousness of God. Hold it out in your hand metaphorically and say, God, you can give it or you can take it away, and I'll bless your name. That's somebody who says, I'm only hungry for what you've got, and nothing's off limits. If there's anything in my life that you need to take so that righteousness is all that I desire, God bless you, and then take it away. It was a great sneeze. Last but not least, what prevents you from expressing your desperation for God's righteousness to become your righteousness today? Every week you're gonna, I mean, I feel like Jesus did this. He taught and then he said, so make a decision. Make a choice. Your way or his way. And listen, I don't know how you've heard God talked about in the past, your way or his way. His way, remember all these things? Inherits the kingdom of God. Is comforted. Inherits the earth. And is satisfied. That is the culmination. That's the byproduct of the broken man or woman. Those things. And my life is a living testament of this. I know that, I mean, on a daily basis, if you're hearing me and drive or get up in the morning, I mean, I'm praying. I'm like, God, I need you in every part of me. If there's any part of me that is not trusting you, would you just reveal that? And I am going to trust you with whatever it is, because I am so convinced that what Jesus says is true. And I am somebody who totally wants to be satisfied and full. And I know it's only found in him. Plain and simple. It's only found in him. So it comes down to maybe just this one last question. This is really the last question. Can you say this? Can you say that you are desperate for none of yourself and all of him? None of yourself and all of him. My pastor, when I was growing up, when I first trusted Christ, used to say this. He said, when you hear truth and you hear a message like this, but you don't know how to take that step into it and you can't do it, it's so challenging for you, it's difficult emotionally or mentally, and you want to go, but you can't. He said, he didn't talk about posturing your hands like this, but we do a lot. We try to display what we say. So I'm trying to display what I say, and I'm saying, God, I put in front of you every single thing that you've entrusted me with, my life, my family, my job, my health, my possessions, everything. And I'm asking you to give or take anything that is not part of what you want from me. And if you ask for something I'm not willing to give, and this is the thing he taught me, he said, I'm just going to invite you to take it away, because I don't know if I'm going to have the strength to give it to you. That's how sweet God is. Listen, guys, God doesn't want to crush you to be crushed. He wants to crush you to build you up. He wants to wound you so that you might find in him everything you've ever longed for.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. If the Lord used this message to speak to you, would you consider leaving us feedback on our iTunes or Facebook page? We would love to hear about what God is doing in your life. If you would like to know more about City Lights and how you can get involved, please visit our website at www.citylights.cc for more information. Have a great day.